men start your engines. Parsha is Va'acharei Mois. Usually it's double portion with Kedoshim. Right? This year we're fortunate that it's a single parsha, that way we can go more in depth into it. Let me tell you some of the highlights of the parsha, and then we'll go back and we will go into more detail. Again, I have to stress, it will be very beneficial. We announce this from time to time to learn the parsha, go over it just in English before you come to class, okay? Because I go on the assumption that you have done that. Okay. The parsha talks about Yom Kippur, the ceremony of Yom Kippur. Came late, Jeff. Stay after class, you'll have to run laps. Parsha talks about Yom Kippur, its service. You should know that in the element, like these three elements in the world, if you would, called Olam Nefesh Shana. Okay, that means like place, time, it means place, the soul, a person, and time. Right? So the holiest time of the year is, right, in Zman is Yom Kippur. That's it. When it comes to time, that is the holiest time. When it comes to a place, what's the holiest geographical location? Well, that's within the holiest country in the world, the land of Israel. Within the holiest city of that country, within Yerushalayim. Within the holiest spot in Yerushalayim, the Holy Temple, the Beis HaMikdash, and within it, the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh Kodeshim. Okay? So that's the point. As a matter of fact, Chazal, our rabbis, tell us that the world sprang out from this Evan Hashtia, this foundation stone. This is the stone that Isaac was bound on. This is the stone that golden mosque is all over, right? This was the spot where the Ten Commandments rested in the Aron, in the Ark, with the two cherubs on top, and Moshe communicated with God. He got his prophecy, Miben Shnei HaKruvim, between the two cherubs, right? Okay? That's where he got his prophecy. So that is the focal point of holiness in the world. The focal point of the holiness as far as time, Yom Kippur. And as far as man, that's the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. Right? So on Yom Kippur, you had all three elements combined. You had the holiest man, the Kohen Gadol, at the holiest time, Yom Kippur, in the holiest makom, in the holiest spot. The Holy of Holies. It was a tremendous, tremendous, like zenith of these three elements. Olam, Shana, Nefesh. Okay? So, and by the way, many a Kohen Gadol did not make it. You know, you had to prepare yourself before going in there. And during the time of the Second Temple, a Kohen Gadol would go in and they had to drag his body out, dead. If you don't have the proper intentions, you know, the proper, if you will, game face, right? You didn't get out of there alive. So it was a tremendous time of trepidation. The Torah portion goes into some of the ceremonies involving the Kohen Gadol, involving the Yom Kippur service. We'll try to go back and hit some highlights. The Torah portion is called Acharei Mois, by the way, after the death. After the death of who? Aaron's son, Nadab and Avihu, again mentioned in the Torah. We're going to have, I believe, five or six Torah portions that are going to talk about the death of Nadab and Avihu. That's how important they are. No coincidence, you'll ask, what's the connection between the Yom Kippur service and the death of these tzaddikim, these great men? Well, the connection is, says the Gemara, just like Yom Kippur atones for sins, so too do the death of tzaddikim. It's a hard concept. We properly mourn them, what we're missing in the world, their righteousness, their good deeds, right? They act as an atonement for us, and they act as a defense attorney for us up in the next world. We don't know how that works exactly. Okay? But it's interesting that the smichus, the juxtaposition of the deaths of not of an avihu, and Yom Kippur, to teach us, just like one atones, the other atones, tzaddikim's death, atone for our sins in some capacity, interest, if you're going to name... Okay, so tzaddikim, their death atone. So, you know, you can mention Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Moshe, David, some... Of all the tzaddikim, who is picked? Not of an avihu. Again, you know, these were very, very great men. So again, we have no concept. We read a couple, 3-4 weeks ago, in the Parsha, how they died. You know, we went over the different commentaries, what they did wrong. You know, we have to understand these were great, great people. Great, great people. Okay. So, in addition to the Yom Kippur Day service that's discussed, in addition to the review again of the deaths of Nadav and Avihu, the two sons of Aaron, other things that are in this Torah portion is the famous verse, V'chai Behem, you shall live by the mitzvahs, which teaches us a lot of things, but one of the sources, for the fact that we push off any mitzvah if a life is in danger is from there, from that verse, V'chai Behem. In other words, right, a great example is a pregnant lady, right, about to give birth, that is. That's considered a life-threatening situation, right, and you can drive, you know, to the hospital or do whatever you need to do for her, okay? We push off Shabbos, right, for this. V'chai Behem, you should live through the mitzvahs and not die by them. That's what the sages tell us, right? Okay, so there's three exceptions, though. There's three exceptions. Every mitzvah, if a life is involved, there's a threat to a life, we push off the mitzvah, save the life, except for three. Three mitzvahs, we have to give up our life rather than violate it. Violate the mitzvah. Anybody knows what they are? Okay, these three are a contradiction to life. That's why you have to give it up. In other words, avodah zarah, idol worshiping. Well, that's a contradiction why you're here. Your whole purpose of being here is to believe in God and do His commandments and so forth and so on. Right? So, a denial of that, idol worshiping, then that's a point in time where you gotta give up your life. Okay? Another one is murder. Right? Who says the sages, who says your blood is any redder than your neighbor's? In other words, someone puts a gun at someone's head and says, if you don't kill him, I'm going to kill you. You got to let yourself be killed. Okay? And the third one is a little harder to understand, and that we have to know all the different aspects involved in it, but that's certainly illegal relationships. So those are the three. Idol worshiping, murder, and certainly legal relationships. Those are the three. You have to give up your life rather than violate them. Melody brings up another interesting point as far as the laws of the country. I think we discussed this. We do abide. We have a mitzvah tells us that we have to abide by laws of the country. Now, the only time that's, so to speak, uprooted is if it's directly opposed to Torah. In other words, its enactment is to uproot Torah from Israel. Okay, like Rome. You know, they had decrees to anybody learning Torah would be put to death. And we have the famous, we read on Yom Kippur, the 10 martyrs, including Rabbi Akiva, who were put to death publicly for learning Torah. There we violate the law of the government, because that is strictly an anti-Semitic law trying to uproot our Yiddishkeit. But any law of the government that physically persecutes us even, we don't rebel. It's interesting. It's only when they mess around with our Torah and our mitzvahs, then we rebel. And that's what Hanukkah, by the way, was all about. That was kind of the difference between Hanukkah and Purim. You know, we put up with a lot until they started trying to mess with us spiritually. Then we fought back. Okay. So that's in the Parsha of V'chai Behem. And then we have a portion of forbidden relationships in the Parsha, including homosexuality. Those forbidden relationships, interesting, this portion is read on Yom Kippur. It's read in Mincha towards Ne'ilah. I mention that because that's the holiest time of the day. Just like Shalosh Shudos on Shabbos is the holiest time of Shabbos, well, towards Ne'ilah is the zenith of Yom Kippur. As we get close to that time, we read the Torah portion dealing with these forbidden relationships. It's fascinating. Because you would think at this holiest of times, right, on this holy day, right, the climax of the day, this would be the furthest thing from your mind. Right, and the Torah is teaching you can never trust yourself. Teaching a lot of lessons, but one of them, you can never trust yourself, And that's canal. Yeah, you're in shul. You're completely separated from the physicality. I gotta read you these disgusting relationships. Beware. Don't fall into the trap. Don't think just because you're like an angel, we're compared to angels on Yom Kippur, that you can't fall and descend to this level. Okay, that's some of the highlights of the Parsha. One more thing. B'chukoseyam lo selechu, do not go in the statutes of the Goyim. That's a very interesting, very broad halacha. We have to know what that is talking about. I'll just tell you this. That means don't go in the statutes of the non-Jewish world. Basically, halachically, it means anything that they're doing out there that has something to do with their religion, you're not allowed to do. That's the halacha. Now, there's an extension of this, each one, according to your own personal, like, Jewish pride, how much you want to take upon yourself. It's an interesting mitzvah. Now, like, different degrees. But halachically, for example, if they're putting out eggs out in April, can't get involved with that. Okay? You know, or a lot of, you know, December 25th cards, can't get involved with that. That's a definite prohibition from the Torah. Okay? Because that's religion. So that's their customs. Now, we'll discuss more on a broader aspect what else it can entail. Now, I'm going to go back. First, we'll take questions. First thing, there's a lot of things. The source is from our Torah portion. We mentioned one before, and here's another one. Chapter 16, verse 30. The verse says, in reference to Yom Kippur, "Latar eschem mekol chatasechem lifnei Hashem titaru." Okay, that you should be purified from all your sins. Before God, you will be purified. Before God, you'll be purified. From here, the Gemara, that Western Gemara called Yuma, knew someone would get it, that tract of Yuma, tells us, because of the words, before God you'll be purified, tells us that, remember, famous, Mekan Sha'avera Sheben Adam Lamakom Yom Kippur Miskaper, that sins between man and God, Yom Kippur atones. Right? But that sins between you and your fellow man, Yom Kippur is not going to atone until you appease each other. And that's why we go around, you know, before Yom Kippur, asking each other, you know, if I did anything, if I said anything, right, please forgive me. Right? So interpersonal relationships, again, Hashem seems to be more exacting how we treat each other than how we treat Him. Don't take that out of context. Okay? That there's a certain aspect there that God is more concerned that we get along and there's unity. And we've mentioned that many times in many different arenas. Okay? Chukosai Tishmaru. In chapter 18, verse 4, we have the mitzvah that tells us about chukim, statutes. You know that we have mitzvahs in different categories, right? For example, does anybody know Mishpatim? What are those mitzvahs? Mishpatim. Anybody know? Mishpatim are basically those mitzvahs that look rational to the outside world. I have to be very careful with that. Because, for example, mitzvahs don't murder, don't steal, right? Makes sense, right? That's why we do them wrong. We treat all mitzvahs like a chuk, which is a statute. We don't understand anything. All we know is that God said do it, and we do it. As a matter of fact, it's a bigger test to do mitzvahs, to obey the mitzvahs like don't murder and don't steal, right? It's a bigger test than, for example, not to wear shatnas, wool and linen together. Why? Why do I say that? Well, wool and linen, you don't wear it, you obviously don't understand it. So for sure you're doing it because God said do it, right? But don't murder, don't steal, well that, you know, you understand that you shouldn't do that. You know, that's like a logical thing. So that's a harder mitzvah to do for the sake of heaven. I'm not doing it because I understand. I'm doing it because you said, God, not to do it. You understand? You understand? It's a little twist on the way you usually look at things, right? Okay, so those are called mishpatim. They look rational to the outside world. The truth is, they're all mitzvahs are the same. Okay. But as compared to other mitzvahs like keeping kosher and wool and linen together and all these other things, they look like statutes, right? They're called chukim. right? And we talked a few weeks ago about the supreme chuk, the red heifer, right? That is Zois Chukas HaTorah, right? Now, so as a matter of fact, if you look at the Rashi, those of you who have a Rashi, chapter 18, verse 4, Rashi says on this, you shall keep my statutes. What are chukim? Devarim. It's interesting, the word chukim, I'm going to interrupt myself, it's my custom. The word chukim is for lachakok, also means to engrave, to chisel. That's like, it's interesting. You know, like, it's a statue you don't understand, but it's like, it's engraved, you do it, it's chiseled in. Right? As a matter of fact, I saw one commentary, I think it was in this week's Parsha, that mentioned our ability to do chukim is because, we have to do all mitzvahs for the same reason. I think Rabbi Soloveitchik says this, that we do chukim, Yudi Yochel Asos Chukim Beglash Shehut Selam Elokim. A Jew is able to do these inexplicable laws because he is made in the image of God. Va'az Nishras B'Pnimyosenu Sheyester Devorim Shemlamala Mesagaso. That we, it's Nishras, it's rooted in our inner dimension that there are things beyond our comprehension. Now, that's deep inside, we know that. That God's in control, He says, do it. That's Rav Soloveitchik says that. That the Jew has the ability to do chukim, while the other world, non-Jewish world, is not able to do that. Rashi says here on chapter 18, verse 4, Devarim Shehem Gezeris HaMelech. What are chukim? These are things that are decrees of the king. Shai Yitzer Hora, the Yitzer Hora, the evil inclination, says, Lama, Atem Shemim Osam. Why are you keeping these mitzvahs? Why are you doing them? Make no sense. The Umas HaOilam and the nations of the world, the Goyim say, they make fun of us, you know? So it says, Ani Hashem, I'm God, Gezarti Aleichem, know that I decreed upon you to do this, E Atem Rasha Lipater, and you cannot absolve yourself from the obligation of doing these statutes even though you do not understand them. Okay, so these are the things that make the Jew stand out, so to speak. Right? Like, in a certain sense, any good person can keep, don't steal, don't murder, all these things. The real test of faith is doing things you don't understand. And those are the chukim. Now, why am I mentioning all this? Because the verse following, it's the verse before, chapter 18, verse 3, seems to tell us that the goyim have chukim. It says, ubichokoseyam lo seilechu. They have chukim. That's interesting. So we have to discuss what are their chukim and how they differ than ours. So I'm going to share with you from a book from the published by the Hebrew Academy of Cleveland called Pnimim. It's English. This is what he says. The Torah has to give us a commandment in the statutes of the Goyim, do not go, and then it proceeds to list also in our Parsha all these forbidden relationships, including homosexuality. So he says the following, quote, society is always in a flux. That which is considered immoral and degenerate, you know, years ago, is no longer viewed as wrong and reprehensible. Quote, unquote, intellectuals are constantly expounding new perspectives and outlooks on morality. The Torah here enjoins us to categorically reject the morals and ways of life of a society where we live which are anti-Torah. We are admonished not to imitate the doings of Mitzrayim and Canaan, that's the rest of the verse by the way, even if this is what's in vogue. Yeah, everybody's doing it. We are not to cut down our Torah ideals to conform to the practices around us. Chukim are mitzvahs that defy rationale, right? The Shol Meshiv says there's also sins that are chukim, that defy rationale, that are incomprehensible, that make no sense whatsoever. You know, they're not commendable, they're not reasonable, but they do them, right? Like homosexuality. 30 years ago, everybody would say, of course, you need to command me that. Of course, it's disgusting. Today, you need a commandment. People think it's an alternative lifestyle. Okay? The Torah must warn us against it, for a life without Torah guide is a life without control, without direction. So it's very, very interesting. The chukim of the non-Jewish world, I'll read you one more thing from the art scroll, the Stone Chumash. We're not to imitate the promiscuous practices of the non-Jewish world. The term chukim is used here because we may think that a nation's culture is set on rational, on a rational norm, right? And that any quote-unquote civilized person must accept them, unless he's demented. The truth is, the culture is an accumulation of practices, many of which are in the least logical. And different societies consider the cultures and societies of other places comical and primitive. The difference between our chukim, our statutes, and society's chukim is simply that ours are God-given. And while the latter is devised by man based on his habits, therefore the Torah warns us, don't fall into the habit-forming, mind-molding trap of imitating the practices of the alien society. This is from Wolby. Okay? So that's a big warning to us, because you get involved in a society that does certain things, and you get so accustomed to it, it doesn't bother you anymore. I remember a famous rabbi was talking about when he was in Israel. And it did a little bit of a different arena, but the same idea. So when he first saw someone drive, he came from Europe, right? He first saw someone drive a car on Shabbos, it really bothered him. He broke down and started to cry. Right? Then a couple months later, he saw it. It didn't bother him. Didn't bother him. You get so accustomed to seeing it, you become insensitive to it. Right? And he said that's the big problem with them wanting to be called, they don't want to be called homosexuals, they want to be called by a name that denotes being merry or happy. That's very bad. It's one thing if you have an evil, but when they try to advertise it and decorate it as being this alternative lifestyle, as an acceptable mode, that's very bad. And that's what happened during the generation of the flood. There was tremendous homosexuality during the generation of the flood. That's why that generation was destroyed. That and theft. So God put up with it, so to speak, for a while. But once they started making it a norm of society, they started having legal, in their terms, legal contracts, marriage contracts, a ketubah, between man and man and lady, you know, and beast and man, all these things. When they made it a norm of society, God destroyed them. So there's a very big difference. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's bad in itself, but when, so to speak, they stayed in their closet and society didn't condone it and wasn't tolerant and wasn't liberal about it, okay? Okay, it was just an evil. But now it threatens all of us in God's eyes. You know, you're not allowed to stand back idly and not make a protest about something like that. There's ways to do it, whatever, okay? This is a very important point here, this stage notes. Now, we started to say legally, according to the letter of Halacha, B'chusayim los lechu, don't go in the statutes of non-Jewish world, means not to imitate any of their practices that have to do with their religion. Right? That's what we said. That's the Halacha. That's for sure. That's incumbent upon each and every one of us. But it would seem to me, Lefi Anius Daiti, it would seem to me, that this halacha can be expanded according to your sensitivities. You know, for example, Rabbi Chaim Altulski in the Yeshiva Torah Yisrael says the following. He says, this mitzvah encompasses not to assimilate any goyish thought, culture, value into your lifestyle. I'll give you an example. Whatever, if you know, you don't relate to Hasidim, the Hasidic movement, right? If you relate to them, you don't relate to them. One thing you got to admire about them, right? They have tremendous Jewish pride. They have tremendous Yiddish stolz. They're sitting there wearing these long garments, even when it's 95 degrees out there, right? The same garments their Tati and their Zaidi wore in Europe, right? Because they do not want to even dress like the non-Jewish world. Not because they hate the non-Jewish world. That's not the word. Everybody's made in the Tzelem Elohim. The non-Jewish world, the Goyim, are made in the image of God too. Everybody, you got to have respect. Every creation of God. So, but that doesn't contradict that you're proud who you are. You're a Jew. I want to look like a Jew. I want to look like what my Rebbe looked like. You know, today, people want to look like this sports hero, that sports hero, this Hollywood star, right? Because you are what you praise. You know that? That's an expression. Ish lefi mahalo. A person is what he praises. Right? If I start telling you, we're schmoozing outside, and I start telling you about how great this ball player is, how fast he can run, it must mean that's my value system. That's what's important to me. Right? If you start telling me all the acts of chesed this individual does, and how they take in guests, and how they give tzedakah, that says a lot about you, because that's what you praise. That must mean, well, that's what your value system is. You understand? So the Hasidim, they want to look like Jews. Again, not because they don't dislike the non-Jews, but they're just proud who they are, right? So they wear these coats. They do not even want to wear a suit. You're allowed to wear a suit. Of course you're allowed to wear a suit, a dress. And the non-Jewish world wears similar clothes, right? Right? Obviously I'm talking about what things are sneers, right? But the Hasidim go further. They go further. I want to look like a Jew like my ancestors. So you got to admire that, okay? And again, you always have to keep in mind, which just over and again, the biggest threat to Jewry, if there's one theme that we continually repeat in this class throughout all the parshas, it's the theme of assimilation. It's the subject matter of every holiday that we have. Every holiday, Purim, Persia, Hanukkah, the Hellenists, right? Mitzrayim, Pesach, every holiday is about us assimilating. So this is a guard against assimilation to maintain your Jewish pride. Says Rav Chaim Altusky, this mitzvah, ubichusei moslechu, do not go in the statutes of the non-Jewish world. This is the tzivui lo assimilate, not to assimilate. Lo yor, don't mix in with the goyim. Don't want to look like the goyim. Don't want to hear what they have to say, what their radio is, what their TV is, what they think is funny. Right? It's for them, fine, but it's not us. It's not what we're interested in. We're light years above it. We're connected to the Torah. Like, you know, famous expression, my dad used to always say, today's headlines wraps tomorrow's fish. You know, by them, what's so important today, you know, next month is something else. It means nothing. By us, everything we do is eternal, eternal, eternal Torah. Okay? So this mitzvah, everybody to their own degree. Rav Chaim Altulski gives an example with a cat. He says he likes cats. He thinks cats are very nice, but he doesn't want to imitate one. Some goyim, very nice, but I'm not interested in imitating one and being like one. Okay? Yes. Let me read you the whole verse, because it's interesting. The whole verse of chapter 18, verse 3 reads, Kamasei Eretz Mitzrayim, Vekamasei Eretz Kanaan, Lo Tasu, Ubekoseim Los Lechu. Like the actions of the lands of Egypt and those of Canaan, which is Israel, right? Don't go on their statutes. So, you know, it's interesting. The most immoral, depraved society there was Canaan. We're told to wipe out those seven nations, right? They're like completely depraved. Very immoral, highly moral, and that's where we're going. And we just came from, you know where we just came from? Pesach, right? Egypt. And we know how promiscuous and how immoral they were. As a matter of fact, during the last of the 10 plagues, the death of the firstborn, right? The firstborn, every house was supposed to be struck down dead. There wasn't one house that wasn't several people dead. Because this was the firstborn of this mother, and this was the firstborn of this father. You know, they were so promiscuous, both partners. Okay, so there wasn't one household that didn't have several dead, because there was many firstborns in every household. Egypt was a very big test for us. The first exile was without the Torah, and it was a place that was highly immoral, and we were a very holy people, you know, very holy people. So as a matter of fact, they during that whole time there, despite how low we went, there was only one incidence of immorality, and that was forced upon a lady. It wasn't even really her fault. Okay, so at any rate, we're told don't do the land of Egypt, which was completely immoral and depraved, and don't do like the lands of Canaan that you're about to go into, that's completely depraved, right? Interesting. And during that span in between was how many years? 40. Where? In the desert. Kabbalistically, the desert, the Midbar, is a place that is full of impurity, tuma. It's void, null and void of holiness. Very interesting. Israel's birth as a nation, going from the most immoral through a most immoral nation through a midbar of impurity into a land that's inhabited by the most immoral nation. Okay, so anyways, we're not to we're not to imitate their statutes. Okay. Now, Stas Emes goes even further. He says this also includes legal things that you're allowed to do. For example, he says, you don't need to tell me that we cannot do whatever homosexuality. We know that. We have a law in the Torah, right? Tells us that. So this must mean, he says, those things like eating, drinking, everyday things, don't do it like them. You're a Jew. When you eat and when you sleep, you're doing it for different reasons. A Jew who sits at his table and eats, his meal can be like a korban. His table is like a mizbeach. I'm quoting you from the Code of Jewish Law, Shulchan Aruch. Right? It's not like they eat. Okay? It's a whole different matter. Okay, so that Sfasem says that's what it's going on. It's going on in our everyday actions. The way you do business. There's a whole section, there's four sections of the Code of Jewish Law, and one of them deals strictly on business dealings. How you're supposed to interact with Shulchan Aruch called Yoradeya. Strictly deal with business dealings. You know, markup, no interest, all these things, right? Honest weights and measures. We have a portion of the Torah about this, right? Mishpatim, right? So even that's a something of holiness. Now, we talked about a certain person that went to Gan Eden alive. I don't know what that means. One of nine people to enter Gan Eden alive. And he was taken early by God. This is one of the first 10 generations. And it says, you know what? You know what he did? He was an honest shoemaker. He was just an honest shoemaker. He's trying to put out the best product possible. Okay? So the Sfasamis is telling us that's what this is going on. Those everyday activities, don't do them like the goyim. You know, put a holiness, anshei kodesh to you, Lee. Be men of holiness. Involved in the physical aspects of the world. Bring holiness into it, as we've talked about many times. Questions. Tattoos, bust up. Tattoos is a Torah prohibition. It's in the Torah. I don't care if the whole world's doing it. I don't care. It's completely prohibited. Pierced ears and a pierced nose, yes. That goes according to the society, you know.
Okay,
now, a pierced nose is a good example. Now, it could be, I think there was a time. I think Rivka was given a nose ring by Eliezer. Okay, so it could be a time. Today, it wouldn't be allowed. So, you know, the rabbis would have to decide if that became fashionable. But other parts of the body, you know, for sure not. Piercing the body, mutilating the body, for sure is not acceptable. Piercing those for a piece of jewelry, for a lady, for a man, would be completely illegal, by the way. Okay? Might be because men in general aren't supposed to wear even rings. Tachshitim is a lady's thing. Okay? But, so those two, but tattoos, there's no way in the world any tattoo would ever be allowed. You're never allowed to etch into the body. That's a strictly Torah prohibition.
Right, so maybe that applied towards piercing.
Could be. But I'm so glad you mentioned this, because here's a classic example where you have to be so careful that you can extract from there, well, you'll think that this applies to the rest of the Torah. When something becomes in fashion and mode, like homosexuality, then it becomes allowed. Chas v'sholom. No. Each one of these things is handled individually, as far as nose ring or something like that. It's handled individually, right? And stuff that's specifically written in the Torah, for sure you can't do. There's no place in the Torah that says you can't have your ears pierced. There's a place in the Torah that says that, like mourning, you shouldn't tear out your hair and cut into your body. So that for sure you can't do. You can never uproot a law of the Torah. Okay? Now there's certain things, you know, like, whatever, you know, there's certain things I would discuss. Are you allowed to wear them? Are you allowed to do them? You know, is it considered, I'll give you a good example. By and large, we don't hold that ladies wear slacks. But at least it's discussed. Because, why was it discussed? Because it used to be slacks was strictly a menswear. Okay, and we know today that it's pretty much both. Right? Both wear. So the idea is that a man's not supposed to wear a lady's garment and a lady's not supposed to wear a man's garment. Okay, I'm sorry I didn't preface that. Okay, so that, you know, at least it's discussed. Are they allowed to wear, you know, because today it's not so much, okay. So we don't usually, ladies do not wear slacks, but at least, again, I'm giving an example where that's thought about, but because that's not written in the Torah one way or another. It just says in general not to wear each other's clothes. So what if, you know, that changes from time to time, right? Okay, so that's a very good question you brought. You got to always, each thing has to be handled individually, number one. Each case individually has to be decided by our rabbis. And number two, actually that's more number one, is if it's specifically stated in the Torah, like no tattoo is specifically stated in the Torah, that for a permanent tattoo, that is, that for sure can never be uprooted, no matter what society's doing. We have to make that perfectly clear. Other questions? We're a nation that's very big on Masorah. That's our a tradition that we get back a chain link all the way back to Mount Sinai. Right? And we, and by the way, this is very important. For example, if your parents took on a chumrah, a stringency, right? Like, let's say, a month before Pesach, they would not eat matzah. Okay? So, I'm talking about people that are brought up, you know, religious from the very beginning. That stringency is on the children. They can't just uproot it. Okay? Because that was the Masorah, that was the tradition of their parents. And the idea is that these, like Hasidim, you know, so their Rebbe, and their Rebbe's Rebbe, the sons of whoever was a Satmar Rebbe, people they emulate, who are holy, very holy people, this is the way they dress. So you want to emulate that. It's not so much it's Poland in the 17th century, it's what those people were about. Okay? Now, as I mentioned, you see the same thing in secular society, the Lahavdil. Those things that people think is neat, you know, whether it's in Texas or the cowboy boot and hats, or whether, you know, it's wearing the latest shoes that the basketball players are wearing, or whatever it is, right? Or the haircut styles, what, you know, whatever it is. Like, Hollywood dictates fashion. People look up to them, so that's what they want to be. So that's why I think that's why you got to. I respect Hasidim very much. I'm not a Hasid, and I don't do any of their cousins, but that idea that they're so proud of who they are, and they want to look Jewish. You know, sometimes our people have the habit of being ashamed that they're Jewish and don't want to look Jewish. People got nose jobs, whatever it is. You know, but the bottom line, if you forget you're Jewish, they'll remind you. Like they say, you can change your noses, but you can't change your Moses. Yes? I knew this was going to be misunderstood. You're right. We get along. Like I said, they're made in the image of God. We don't go out there and despise the non-Jewish world or hate them. We don't go around doing that. But there's a big difference between, you know, that and just trying to emulate them and want to be like them. And you got to go along and get along, go along, that type of thing. You got to know, you got to be honest with yourself. Not you. A person in general has to be honest with himself. You find, by and large, the apologetic Jew, you know, they lose the goy's respect. The Jew who adheres fast and hard to what he is, you gain their respect. You can do it. Someone was telling me, you were telling me, about a Hasidic deputy in New York. What was it? So, a deputy? Long payus. Everything. Usually they have, I think they have a rule, the police force usually had a rule that you had to be clean shaven. He's not. Right? And he's going to interact with the non-Jewish world all the time and still maintain his Jewish pride. So it can be done if you want to do it, if it's important to you. I understand what you're saying. I mean, I've had in the different businesses I've been involved in, you know, I've had a lot of interaction with the non-Jewish world. And, you know, you tell them you keep kosher, you can't go out to a business lunch. By and large, most of the time they respect you, that you are a person of conviction, right? And you're proud of it. It's the problem is when we start getting apologetic and start to squirm out of it, then automatically we lose their respect. Because they see you're not proud of it. I realize it's more complicated than I'm putting it. And I know there's a lot of gray areas. I understand that. But you have to remember one thing. The world's not running Hefker. Hashem is in control. You have to have faith and trust in God. You do what you got to do. You know, pray for God, you know, to grant you a thread of grace. And if you are trying to be a good, loyal, proud Jew, God will bless you with success. You know, the bottom line, there is test in life. God continuously puts us in tests. And some of those tests means, I want to see how proud you are of being Jewish. Are you going to be afraid this is going to ruin your business relationship, your dealing, or are you going to have trust in me? I'm not saying do anything wacko, you know, going up and say, you know, you're a low-life goy. We don't go around doing that, right? And we don't hold that, you know, the next world is reserved for Jews. We know that the good non-Jewish world also has a share there. You know. Just like, you know, pluralism, it works both ways. Just like, you know, You're not telling them what to do, right? They got to respect who you are and what you're trying to do. Unfortunately, this pluralism business only works one way. Everybody's very tolerant on one side. When it comes to the Orthodox Jew, all of a sudden, that tolerance goes out the window. Quite other question. Special bracha, chuda chesed, that the children of Rachel have. Let's see. Yes? Another one of the sources in the Torah for some of the major rabbinical mitzvahs is from the verse in chapter 18, verse 30. This verse states, Ushmartem es mishmarti, you shall safeguard, you shall watch over my safeguards. Okay? Okay? You should put safeguards. Now, anybody know what this could refer to? Anyone want to take a shot at this? For example,
fences around the Torah.
Good. Siag l'Torah. Putting fence around the Torah. Yeah, you're both right. Now, for example, is there a mitzvah in the Torah that you cannot write on Shabbos? Is there a mitzvah in the Torah? Is that a mitzvah in the Torah? And you can't write on Shabbos? Yeah. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. It's based on all the 39 forbidden works are based on the 39 works that were involved in building the tabernacle, right? And they used to mark the crushing, the boards, right? Like AA, whatever, you know, and match each side of them, right? That's a prohibition from the Torah. How about picking up a pen? Is that a prohibition from the Torah? No. That's a rabbinical prohibition based on this verse. Muksa, what we call muksa. Right? Why? Said the rabbis, you know, you're so used to writing that you'll come if you pick up a pen, you know? You just want to move it, but you'll forget, you'll come to write. I got to put a guard around our Torah. I want to tell you that a pen is muksa on Shabbos. So if you ever want to ask where the rabbis come up with this, who gives them the right to do it? God does from this verse. You shall put safeguards. The rabbis, not just any rabbi can do it. These were people, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the men of the Great Assembly. These were prophets, right? Or they had Ruach HaKodesh, another minor form of prophecy, right? That decided these decrees based on their divine communication to enact these things. So these rabbinical mitzvahs always have a Torah base to it, number one, and a Torah authority. Right to it. From one of them, one of the verses, one of the sources is our verse, Ushmartem es mishmarti, that God gives the right and the authority to the rabbis to make these decrees. Yes. Listen to this thought. First of all, it says on this verse, V'chai by him. You shall live by them. So we said, you know, halachically, what does that mean? You push off any mitzvah if a life is threatening, except for three. Other things that it means, v'chaimim. In the next world, you'll live. You do Torah mitzvahs here, you'll have an eternity. Another explanation says the Chafetz Chaim, sheniska l'tchias amesim, that you'll be resurrected. We just read a haftorah of a miniature form of resurrection, the dried bones, right? That you do the mitzvah, says the Chafetz Chaim, in this world, to that degree you will be whole during the resurrection of the dead. And he gives an example. Let's say a mitzvah that's incumbent upon a guy, tefillin. He doesn't put on his tefillin. He'll come up, resurrection of dead, maybe missing that left arm. Or other mitzvahs that relate to an eyebrow, a finger, a kneecap. I don't know what it is, right? All the mitzvahs are related to parts of the body. If a person didn't do them, to that degree, he'll come up, the resurrection of the dead, lacking. Okay? So, Chabzam says, Chai Bam, you shall live through the mitzvahs in the resurrection of the dead. Or Chaim HaKadosh goes a step before this. He says, talking about this world also. Talking about having it good in this world. He says, listen to this. He says, Kol HaMitzvahs Tzarichim, we need all the mitzvahs for our rectification. A person needs all the mitzvahs. And he says, you know, there's certain mitzvahs, shesugulasam la'arich yomim, yesh besugulasam esher, bonim. There are certain mitzvahs that will give you sons, certain mitzvahs that will give you wealth, certain mitzvahs will give you long life, honor. Well, we don't know what they are. God didn't give us the formula to to get this mitzvah for wealth. He gives the formula. Why? Obvious reasons. Right? Everybody would be doing the mitzvah, you know, right, for long life, or, well, and that's not what they need. We need all the mitzvahs. But what's the point of all this? He says, it's amazing. Again, one of these things that you can't take out of context by itself. You have to put this in with the mixture and formula of everything else we've learned. But he says, if you see a person in this world, they see him that he's Roim l'shamayim l'brius. He's an evil guy. When it comes to God, you know, his relationship with God ain't so great. And to his interpersonal relationship also ain't too great. Right? He's not such a great guy. Right? Bateim shalom. Bateim shalom. You see, this house is in peace. Malayim kol tuv. And he has everything. And he has wealth. Right? Don't be alarmed. Know that this guy locked into a mitzvah. He somehow, in his lifetime, he locked into a mitzvah, shesuglasa tzlocha oylamaza, that gives you success in this world. Of course, he's not going to get in the next world. You know, the next world is where it all counts anyways. This world, you know, you live 80, 90 years, whatever it is. There, God judges everything. Any hangnail, any little bit of affliction you had in this world, God counts that. You get reward for it. You get reward for it. So, interesting, Chor Chaim is warning us, don't get alarmed if you see people having success in this world. Right? Now you got to take this in conjunction with a verse that we had in Deuteronomy, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu pays his enemies to their face. Their face means this world. Right? You know, some guy has some mitzvahs, right? He's an evil person, so whatever little mitzvahs he is, God's going to pay him off in this world. So you'll have nothing in the next world. We discussed this many times, okay? We're going to conclude with this. You ready? First of all, I lied. We're going to conclude after this. The Azazel, we have a strange thing that we do on Yom Kippur. I say strange because it looks like a paganistic type of thing. We have this goat, two goats, identical goats. A seer is a goat in Hebrew, right? And we cast a lot, right? In the right hand, right? It says Lashem to God, and we take that goat, and he gets to be sacrificed to God. The other one says Azazel, right? Which, right? I guess it's hell. Right, and you take the goat, and the Kohen Gadol like confesses all the sins of Israel on its head and throws them off the cliff. Yes, right. And you're thinking, what's going on here? Now we know everything is like deep, deep mystical stuff. I don't know what's going on here. It's one of the most mystical things that's going on. But I'll tell you this much. It says in the Gemara, "Ritzoneinu la'asos ritzoncha." It's our will to do your will, God. Elamai, why don't we do it? Why do we keep slipping up, making mistakes? It says, because of Seor Be'isa and Shibud Malchus, because the yeast in the dough and the persecution of the kingdoms. The yeast in the dough means the Yetzirah, the evil inclination. This is a Seir La'azazel, a goat that you send it to hell. You know what Seir is a nickname for? You know what Seir really means? Seir is from the word sa'ar, means hair. Seir, hairy, is hairy. You know else? You know when the Torah is called hairy? Esav. That's right. Right. He was born, scary looking kid. He was born with a full set of teeth and hairy and everything. He needed a shave as he came out of the womb. So like, right? So, that is Esav. Now, do you remember when Yaakov wrestled his angel, whatever it was, his sar, it's called his angel. That is the Yetzer Hora. You hear? Esav's spiritual entity, his angel, is the Yetzer Hora. Yaakov defeated it. So there's two things the Gemara is telling us that keeps us from really deep inside doing the will of God. We all want to do the will of God. Two things are keeping us. One is the Seir. Esav, spiritual entity, the Yetzer Hara, right? He tempts us in areas that we really, if we were left alone, we didn't have an evil inclination, we'd all do the will of God. And the other is the physical side of Esav. Esav is the exile we're in now, Edom, the longest exile, over 1925 years. The persecution of the nations. Remember, Esau comes in two formats. Yaakov said, save me from the hand of my brother. Save me from the hand of Esau. The assimilation and the annihilation. Those two, right? The persecution or the Holocaust of love. Right? So, if it wasn't for these two things, the eternal Yetzer Hara that distracts us with temptations, and the external enemy, Esau, in his two faces, the Seir, in his two faces, of trying to get us to assimilate with them or persecuting us, either one of those, we'd all do the will of God. So what does the Kohen Gadol do on Yom Kippur when we're all pure and cleansed of sin? We have no desire to sin. He takes, whatever this means, I don't know how it works, but he takes the sins of Israel and puts it on the Seir Lazazel. It's not really the essence of Israel, these sins. This is the Seir. It's because of the Seir, the Yetzer Hara, and Esav, Edom, the Golis. The evil kingdoms are persecuting us and throws it off the cliff. That's some of the symbolic meanings. We'll close with this void. It says, V'chai b'hem. You got to really lock this in. V'chai b'hem, we said, means you shall live through the mitzvahs, right? Okay. I'm going to tell you something else it means. We said it means to live for the next world. In Olam Haba, it'll give you eternity. We said it means resurrection of the dead. I'll tell you something more. V'chai b'hem means you live chai b'hem. You live because of the mitzvahs. There is no other reason to live. That's what it means. The whole purpose of life, the whole thing worth living, is because you have mitzvahs. It says the famous Medrash that God uprooted the mountain, Mount Sinai, and held it over the Jewish people. Remember this? He said, accept the Torah? Good. If not, this will be your burial spot. So we all, you know, said, what's going on here? Israel said, Naaseh v'nishma, we'll do. And then we'll hear. Why did God force the mountain over our heads? So what it really means, says one of the commentators, it's not that God threatened. If we don't accept the Torah, he'll kill us there. He'll bury us under the mount. It means it's a cause and effect. It's a metzias. Without the Torah mitzvahs, you're dead. You could be walking, you could be breathing, you could be eating, you could be a golem, but you're dead. Without Torah mitzvahs, you're dead. The chai behem, you have life behem in the mitzvahs. That's what gives you life. That's what it means. So, step further. V'chai b'hem, say the Chassidish Rebbes. V'chai b'hem, chai. V'chayim, right? V'chayim? V'chai, put life b'hem in the mitzvahs. Put a chius, a vitality, a labor. Put life in the mitzvahs. If you truly feel they're your life, that's what you hear. That's what you look forward to. Right? Shouldn't be when I'm in shul, you know, I'm looking at the watch, you know, 15 more minutes, I'm out of here, I can get back to the real world. No, that's not the way a Jew is supposed to think. This is it. It doesn't get any better than this. I have a private audience with God, right? We're learning Torah together here. This is it. This is Gan Eden on earth. Right now, you guys are in heaven. Right now, we're in heaven. It doesn't get any better than this. This is what it's all about. So now we got to lock into that. We just came off of Pesach, right? Tremendous spiritual high. We got to carry that over, right? And realize that's the purpose of the three festivals. It's like a station break. Plug in. Recharge spiritually. Take it to Shavuos. Every day of the Sphira. We're counting another day. Another day to the giving of the Torah. The Torah. One more day closer. One more day closer. That's what we're living for. It says in the books of Kabbalah that the 49 days of Sphira is really a microcosm of our whole life. That's what it is. Every day we're looking forward to getting the Torah because that's what we live for. V'chai b'hem. We live through Torah mitzvahs. That's what makes us Jews. With Eretz Yisrael. Without Eretz Yisrael, we always have the Torah. With Eretz Yisrael, it's better. You can do Torah mitzvahs better. But what makes us a Jewish nation is the Torah. Make no mistake about it. We're a Torah nation. Okay? The final thing, you got to put life in it, we said. You got to remember. To the degree, v'chai b'hem, you put life in your mitzvahs, you put a vitality, you know, you get enthused, you look forward to them, you feel the zeis, the sweetness of Torah mitzvahs, to that degree that you put a life in the mitzvahs, oh, to that degree, mitzvahs and Torah will be your life. Good Shabbos.